I'll tell you when I know. Schemes are like fruit. They require a certain ripening. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Chimps and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in the second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinners.
To know how many times they say scheme.
A lot, as evidenced by this particular search, which is nice because I'm going to be able to come back later and find many of these other quotes that are usable, I think. It was just nice to see a Tyrion quote that I really dug, some of his wisdom that is, I think, not used nearly as much as others.
Can't ever go wrong with his, and it's also hilarious how just about everything that he talks about can some way be misconstrued to be about alcohol or women in some way or another.
You know, I think he's doing it on purpose.
I do too.
Yeah.
He leaves that door open for you. If your mind is as bad as his, then wander away.
Yes. Speaking of wandering, thank you listeners for wandering back to episode 266. Of the White Book. Conveniently, with just myself and Tommy here, I'm Will, by the way, it's a lot easier to get straight into the actual introductions and that sort of thing. So welcome to a kind of abbreviated Team Glory.
Yeah, we were only able to get two of us to wander to the episode.
Ooh, that was forced. That was forced.
you know, without the group dynamic, I just can't bring the funnies like usual.
Yeah, man, it's tough. Okay, so maybe this is going to be a little drier than usual episode, listeners. But hey, sometimes it's good to just get the facts of the case and just move on from there, right?
Yeah, let's do that.
Lovely. Listeners are going to hate this. But we will power right on here and see what happens. We've definitely got some Thrones news to talk about. One of which is one that actually cropped up last week, of course, the day after we recorded, which is just how it always seems to go, isn't it? And that particular one, is the fact that we got an FAQ for the game. Now, granted, it was it's dated, actually still in the future, for the 10th. By the time this episode goes up, it will even still be in the future from then, but folks were able to find the link to it, which is pretty awesome. And it's honestly very straightforward. Things remain, I think, considerably less turbulent via FAQ updates than they were in first edition.
And can I say, it feels like we got this one far more in advance of Worlds than we did previously, and I'm not positive about that. It just feels like it might have been not only dropped earlier, but with a lot less pomp and circumstance, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, because it really wasn't anything huge, like I said, other than, we got the acknowledgement about what the card pool will be for Worlds, which is at this point you know, everything. We're not going to have that Lanny box. We're not going to have Valor. So that's kind of a bummer. And past that, we really just kind of got clarification items, actual kind of frequently asked questions. No errata, still nothing like a restricted list or a variation thereof. So it feels very tame to me.
Yeah, still would have liked to have these extra couple of weeks back in the 1.0 when, you know, they were robust FAQs, but I think they did a good job with this, even though there was limited impact. I think some of the stuff that they clarified and the way that they did it was helpful, especially for newer players and players that aren't used to playing games of this kind.
Yeah, so, I mean, let's kind of walk through. I don't think we're going to read the entries word for word here, but we're going to give listeners a brief update of what the FAQ said. The first entry is a very straightforward one that basically says the only errata that applies is errata that is listed in this document. If, say, we reprint something on a draft card that's slightly different or in a different translation or whatnot, that doesn't matter. Only this document is considered the like final arbiter of what that errata is. So that's good. That's good. Straightforward. Not something I admit to having realized was needed, but we've got it.
And glad that there isn't any that exists yet.
Yes. Nice. Very nice to have so far. Past that, then, we got just a little bit of information here breaking down, well, three different kinds of information in the game: derived, hidden, and open information, and kind of what aspects of the game those cover. So, for instance, just to give you the idea, derived information then is things that folks have the opportunity to learn through the effects or things that are open and on the table here. So that's derived information then. Maybe, say, you've got Sirio's training on Sansa. So derived information being that she does have a military icon. So it says, you know, the players can use a token or something to remember the information, but you can't try to hide it from somebody else. So pretty easy peasy. Hidden information then is, well, just that, information that your opponent would not know. So anything that they would be unable to read: unrevealed plots, cards in your hand, cards still in your deck, that sort of thing. Then
I found the hidden information part to be the most interesting, especially where it says a player cannot learn hidden information without the aid of a game effect, rule, or another player verbally communicating the information. So it kind of says without saying it that you can tell people what's in your hand, but you can't show them. I don't know if I'm inferring that incorrectly, or feel like that's what they're saying.
I think you're totally right. And I think for the most part, that is likely to come up in Melee games. Look at that. We've got something that kind of applies in Melee, where if you've had something where you've been able to look at one player's hand, say, seen in the flames or something, you may then tell the other players, hey, I got rid of his Lady Sansa's rose, but he's still got a superior claim in hand. Now, you may or may not be lying about that. Who knows? But this does say that you are allowed to tell the other players.
Well, and it explicitly says that you're not required to tell the truth.
Exactly, exactly. Which, again, plays into Melee. I don't see folks explicitly lie about that sort of thing often or any time I can remember, but I think that is potentially a valid tactic to try and get people to turn on somebody.
Oh, I think that that's very untrue. I think people lie about having or not having the superior claim or the in 1.0 incinerate or whatever the case may be quite often.
Oh yeah, like their own effect. Yes, sorry, I was thinking
the scene
about
of flames example.
Third person. Yeah,
definitely.
Well, I guess maybe that sends us on to the last one, which is open information, which is just publicly visible stuff in the game. So anything that's face-ups, you know, stuff in like dead and discard piles, used plots. Interestingly here, the number of cards in a player's deck or hand, amount of gold or power, that type of thing. And it says that all players are entitled access to the open information, and you can't hide it or omit specific details, but you must allow your opponent to discover the information themselves if they attempt to do so. So I took this as you know, keying in on an argument we've had on this show, one that Greg and I argued very stridently back and forth on, with the example of something like number of cards in hand and whether you're obligated to tell your opponent how many cards you have in hand when they ask. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Tommy, but the way I take this is, yes, your opponent is obligated to know if they would like to know, but that you don't necessarily personally have to tell them. You could hand them your cards and let them physically count the cards in your hand or your deck or whatever, if you would rather do that.
That's exactly what I got out of it, so much so that you could just put your hand down on the table and let them count them.
Yeah, that was definitely the kind of vibe I got, which I think addresses some of the concerns that Greg had brought up when we were hashing this out previously about what happens if, you know, say you tell them five, but you legitimately forgot, ah, crap, I drew one extra card off of, you know, that one effect. I'm actually at six. But as many people do, you had your cards sitting down on the table in a stack. You didn't pick it up and recount before telling them. You just went off your memory and you were wrong. You know, then are you in violation of the rules or whatever? So this kind of codifies, if you have concerns about that, you can allow your opponent to discover that information themselves.
Now, have you ever felt that answering an opponent when they ask you specifically about your hand, you just sit there and you count the cards in your hand and then tell them? I mean, as opposed to just saying from memory what it is, I often just find myself going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and telling them exactly what I just counted in front of their face, as opposed to just answering it while they're in a stack. It kind of feels like you're giving them a little more validation of the information that you're providing to them. But, I mean, is it to the point in any game that you've ever had where you're annoyed with answering the question or you find some reason that you don't want to, that it would be to your advantage to just leave your cards on the table and let them count them themselves? Is it something where you've had an opponent stalling and repeatedly asking questions over and over again, and you're able to just leave your cards there and they can constantly count them whenever they want to? I'm just trying to think of what an application situation for that, like what you and Greg have talked about in the past, like when that's come up and become an issue for you.
I've personally never had an issue. I mean, I was on the side of that particular argument that if there was anything that now would be deemed open information according to this, that my opponent wanted to know, be it cards in hand, current strength in a challenge, something like that, I was perfectly willing to answer that, because in my mind, it is a public matter of the game state that we have to both agree on. So I've never had any concerns about that, though I know other players have some reservations that I admit I just don't really fully understand beyond, in my mind, just kind of wanting to be contrary.
Now, the cards in hand thing I have less of an issue with, and I would always, you know, readily provide that information. But the one that you just mentioned of strength in a challenge, even though that's open information, you don't have to calculate that for your opponent. It is up to them to calculate it accurately. And I could see that being a point of contention with very Jamie players.
I mean, I don't know. According to my reading, that is probably a combination potentially of open information and derived information, depending on if there's strength bonuses to be, you know, recalculated or whatever.
And does that derived information say that you have to you have to declare it for your opponent?
Well, sort of. Okay. I said we weren't going to read these in detail, but here's the paragraph that I think applies to that. If derived information...
Real quick, before you get into that, I just want to reference, in the rules, when it says that you declare a challenge, you simply are saying that you declare a military challenge. You don't have to provide the strength information
at all. Right, right. And I don't necessarily volunteer it, but if I say, you know, military challenge with, I don't know, Jamie and the Hound or whatever.
Sure.
And, you know, I kneel them, do anything appropriate. Obviously, I'm not kneeling Jamie in most instances. And then my opponent, you know, looks at the board, looks back and forth, and asks, how much is that for? Or, as I think is much more common, if they say, okay, for 11 as a question, and then I generally will confirm 11.
Right, and so that's where I was hoping that this would go, is that I think is so long as they're asking you for it, or they're asking that you confirm what they have calculated, then that's your obligation to give the truth. However, mm-hmm. if they don't ask, I don't think you're obliged to provide any information.
Correct, correct. Yeah, and I would never say that you are obliged to push information at your opponent. Only answer when asked.
Right, that's all I wanted to touch on.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this paragraph here in derived information backs that up, where it says, if derived information is dependent on a player's previous decision or action, he or she must answer truthfully when asked about that decision or action. And then they have their example. Steph chooses military when she reveals calm over Westeros. During the challenge phase, Brian forgets and asks Steph which challenge type she chose for calm over Westeros. Steph must answer honestly that she chose military. Similarly, I would say total strength available in a challenge is a stat that is modified based on your decisions, i.e. who you actually declared in the challenge. So
example that you gave was so good, because a lot of times you'll have somebody say, oh, it's 4-11, forgetting that Jamie was part of the challenge because of his non-kneeling.
Right, right. But, and in that case, then, you know, say you've forgotten that, maybe it's with, I don't know, whoever else along with Jamie, you know, let's stick with Jamie and the Hound example. If my opponent asked to confirm and say for 6, then I would say, according to this rule, I am obligated to say no 11. Jamie is also in the challenge, or at least no 11.
Correct.
But it's probably best to also clarify, Jamie. This is an interesting example I happen to pick, since he wouldn't be knelt in this example. There's not the easy visual aid that he has been declared. So that does muddy the waters. My apologies.
No, that's why I think it's a great example, because there's implications to it. Oftentimes, you know, an opponent, you'll show your two characters, you'll push them forward, your Hound will be knelt, Jamie will still be standing, but you'll say, you know, military challenge, and either pushing them forward or saying with Jamie and the Hound. And then they'll look at their hand, they'll look at who they're going to defend with, and then by the time that they've made up their mind, they reevaluate the board state, they've forgotten that Jamie was part of it, and they think that they're just blocking the Hound, and then you go to play your put to the sword, and they're like, wait, why? Oh, because Jamie was in the challenge. And that's why I'm taking this opportunity to point this out, because you should always, before you make your action and commit with your blockers or anything of that nature, always just reiterate or confirm what your opponent has said. Because that is, based on this entry, that is your right to have them confirm that open or derived information for you. Which, getting them to say it again is only going to be to your benefit.
Agreed, agreed. And I think this is my kind of final thought on these chunks of information, is that as you said, it's your right to ask for confirmation. I don't view it as wanting my opponent to do the work or the math for me, and I don't think anyone else out there should view it that way. I think it should be viewed as it's anyone's right to ask for confirmation, so that we can verify game state, verify that we both agree on these calculations, and try to avoid any inaccuracies in the actual rules and play.
Couldn't agree more.
Not necessarily poor decision making, That's still possible, but make sure the actual rules are followed.
Couldn't agree more. Don't expect people to volunteer information for you. The impetus is on you to ask and take your opportunities to ask, because it's only going to make you make better decisions.
Okay, so moving on from that, we have a very quick couple word tweaks to unique cards. Basically fixing a couple words so that it's very clear that players and opponents can't marshal or put into play a copy of a unique card that that player has already in their dead pile. So pretty simple there. Then let's see, we've got some info on under dynamic situations on player choices made as a part of initiating abilities. This is just kind of hedging your bets over if something happens so that there's no legal targets at the time that they would be chosen, then the ability or event card just fizzles, though it doesn't use the word fizzle. I think that gets the concept across. It just resolves unsuccessfully, the event's put in the discard pile, that type of thing.
Yep, not much to say there.
Yep. There's also a little bit of clarification on challenge icons, which is admittedly a portion of the game that can be a little weird for players to kind of wrap their mind around. While the game does effectively keep a running total of pluses and minuses on particular icons, right? So that's how you're able to use Nymeria to take a military icon away from a character that doesn't have one, and then thus give her one. The game state, if you're talking about whether an icon exists or not, only ever makes a binary check. Yes or no, does it have the icon or not? It does not count the individual pluses and minuses. So even if you have, you know, 18 pluses, the game still only reads that as yes. Or if you have, you know, 400 minuses, the game still only reads that as no.
Right.
So pretty simple there as well. And then we get a timing clarification, actually worded as a frequently asked question regarding a couple different pillage reactions in Sir Gregor and Euron Crow's Eye, asking which player gets to determine the order their abilities resolve. And basically, if you're the controller, you get to choose what order their abilities resolve in. The first player determines the order of when the keywords go off, be that renown, you know, pillage, insight, that sort of thing. But within that type, the controller of the cards there chooses which order to activate those.
And I think this is a really good entry, because I don't know that that's necessarily intuitive based on the way decisions in conflicting situations is worded in the rulebook. I think a brand new person to the game might read that as not only is the order determined by the first player, but the order in which those specific instances are resolved is also a first player decision. So I think this is a home run for them to add to that FAQ.
Yeah, and I think it brings my mind back to an interesting note that my buddy here in town, Corey, had pointed out, many months ago at this point. But this particular entry alludes to it in that the first player must determine what order keywords resolve in or are processed in, according to this entry here. Which I would argue means that first player, like if those keywords are in the challenge, first player must declare what order those resolve in, effectively meaning, say, you know, I defend with my Robert Baratheon or whatever as second player, my opponent must designate what order renown and intimidate are processed in, thus making it much harder for me to forget to trigger those. And I found it very odd that nobody has really talked much about that type of thing online.
See, now that's an interesting point, though, is if you're saying that the first player, as you get to the keyword step, determines the order in which the keywords are processed, is it then possible for you to forget to trigger it when the order has already been laid out and it is said that it's happening in this order?
That's exactly my point. If you're not first player, I would argue you cannot forget, because first player must spell it out. You could still opt not to claim your renown for some reason you didn't want to. Say you don't want an Edmure taking it or something. But I would argue you would not be able to forget. Now, first player, now that gets a little bit fuzzier. If they're trying to deal with their own renown, for instance, and they forget to determine what order they go off in, I would say second player is not necessarily... I would say second player, or later, is not under any obligation to bring that up, because it's, one, not their job to determine the order, and two, they're optional. So if player one does not determine an order, I would say they have decided not to enact them. So, I don't know. It's just an odd quirk of the rules, in my mind, that I'm surprised we haven't seen more discussion about.
Well, because once you've declared that order, that then becomes open information.
I would say so, or possibly derived.
Well, no, because it's not from a card effect or anything else, right? You're just simply deciding the order of a game, a framework structure.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Right.
Which I would read as open information, but I'm no rules lawyer, so, you know, I'm sure somebody will clarify this for us, but...
I mean, either way, if it was open or derived, it looks like you're under obligation to confirm with your opponent if they ask,
that this
right?
Is the step. Right.
Yeah, so, like, if you just get into the habit of always asking first player at the end of a challenge, okay, what order do keywords resolve in? It's probably going to be very hard to forget to trigger one.
Yeah, I mean, you could still, like you said, neglect to process one, but you're always going to be granted the opportunity to process as second player.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Interesting. This entry just kind of reminded me of that, because it touched on a portion of that aspect. So, there we go. The next entry also has to do with keyword processing, and I don't know of any way that this can happen yet, but basically it says that if a character gains a keyword after that keyword has already been processed, what happens? And the answer is nothing. That keyword's already been processed. Sorry about you. Sounds pretty easy. I imagine we'll know what card that affects when we get it.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. You can't do it twice. I mean,
yeah. Then the last one here is the entry on Varus Riddle versus Summer Harvest. I'm not going to delve into the discussions and arguments back and forth on this, and whether or not it is a good or intuitive ruling. But what I will say is that the final wording here based on this entry is that the player with Varus' Riddle then can redefine the gold value on that Summer Harvest by looking at that Summer Harvest's own gold, where X is always treated as zero when the game's looking for a number like that, thus meaning it gets two gold. So be on the lookout if those are revealed there. It's going to wind up being how the first player goes to determine that.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about this one, but it really doesn't matter because that's how it is. So,
yeah,
live it.
Yeah, it's one I would really watch out for in Melee, because both of these are plots that I think are quite good in Melee, which ups the odds, especially even with multiple opponents, that this could potentially happen to you.
Absolutely.
So be on the lookout. Summer Harvest may be much less popular in Melee than I thought it would at first. Okay, well, aside from that, we also got a new article from FFG about their little trait voting tournament, which I thought seems pretty awesome. We hadn't heard much of an update about the Battle for the Trident stuff in a while, but it's kind of tied in with the store championships. So what is it we're doing, Tommy?
We are choosing the traits that an upcoming objective is going to be centered around, be it knights, armies, or maesters. And that's going to be determined, as you said, by not only votes, but tournament results that can give you additional voting capacity, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, sure enough. It's going to be held. It's interesting that all of the events are going to be held at virtually the same time. November 12th and 13th are the only time that those can take place at the same locations that store championships will be. And but there's also going to be the opportunity for folks to vote via retweets on November 10th. So we'll see how the tweet stuff goes. But I'm very interested by the voting, and we've got some alt art summons and a pretty cool playmat that they're giving out for this. And yeah, then they had some developers come on and try to pitch us on different directions to vote for the blue, the red, or the green fork, that being knights, army, and maesters in order. And, you know, while it's a fun tone and kind of entertaining to hear them talking a little bit of crap on the other traits and stuff, and I kind of dig the political style posters, it feels like just fluff. There's not much here to tell us what these are or could be.
Yeah, don't feel like those color choices are accidental either, right? I mean, they've got red, blue, and green. Not a coincidence.
Yeah. The bare little bit we have here, the knights seem to be insinuating it will be power challenger based or power gain in some fashion. Because it says vote blue fork if you like getting 15 power faster than anyone else. So probably something power related.
Additionally, I love the fact that while of course applying to your senses of the challenge icons, it also translates to that political parallel that you were mentioning about, you know, you've got your Democrat, your Republican, and your Libertarian, if you will. I thought that was a nice little touch that marries up with your challenge icons for anybody that's...
Libertarian? What are you talking about? The Maesters are definitely Green Party.
Well, sure. I was just, you know, saying your third party is always going to be a green color representation, be it Libertarians or Green Party.
There you go. Except I think Libertarians generally get yellow used for them in election maps and stuff, don't they?
I think you're right.
Yeah.
So we'll go Green Party. My fault. I think you're right.
So armies, then there's a pitch here that it will bring military challenges and underplayed characters to the forefront. Well, I imagine the armies are the underplayed characters, so that doesn't tell us much other than this is military focused.
Or whatever that low cost chaff is they mention, that could also be underplayed characters if you're looking at, you know, a four or higher cost curve. You're probably going to have some mix of, you know, fives and sixes and then ones and twos that likely are suboptimal characters in general decks.
And Maesters then just, I think, even gives us the least hint of things, but by process of elimination feels like intrigue, plus the green color coding, just says that it would allow us to take the game in a new direction, one in which nuance, subtlety, and the concept of mind over matter matters. So, yeah, I don't know. While these are fun, I want just a little bit more concrete pull to make me excited about something I want to see in the game. This is so nebulous that it's hard for me to get pumped up about any particular option.
Yeah, I was hoping for a little bit more, but maybe it's going to be a slow burn where, you know, we get hinted and hinted again, reminded, builds up as we get closer, get people fired up about it. I mean, we haven't even had Worlds yet, so there is a lot of time for them to get to that.
Yeah, sure enough. So hopefully this will go well. We'll see. I'm excited for it in general. I just want to know more about it.
Agreed. One way or the other, it'll be interesting because it's something new.
Okay, so let's see. That also sends us on to a little bit of listener news. This one is about another fan-run tournament. We're going to branch out a little bit and talk about and give some props to something that is not run by one of the hosts. This is the Vase Bulgar tournament coming up just over 2 weeks at the time we're recording this, October 22nd and 23rd in Bulgaria. Man, I'm kind of flip-flopping how I want to pronounce those those vowels. If I want to go for the more European sound or the American, it's kind of awkward. My apologies to the listeners.
No one's going to call you on it. I would have messed up the Vias or Vase, so don't worry about it.
All right, fair enough. Well, regardless, they're kicking up a good event with Joust on the 22nd and Melee on the 23rd. This is going to be just about a month before Stalik and is not officially a Road to Stalik event. They still would love to have folks down for that. They don't have any real tradition of this sort of thing yet, but they're wanting to kind of kick things into gear and let this kind of be the start of things. So they're going to be posting more information and prize stuff as we get closer, I think. So if you are within a reasonable travel distance, definitely go check it out. I'll throw a link to it in the show notes and try and point some folks their way. All right, and we've got another little bit of stuff. It's not exactly news, but I did just want to throw out a quick little recap of our Knights of the Long Summer event, Melee tournament here in Missouri over this past weekend. I was hoping initially that our turnout would be around 20 and we could be kind of store championship sized, but we had some folks fall through at the last minute. We only wound up with 11 in the end. Still, it was a good time. We had several new players. A bunch of folks just had an absolute blast with it. I wound up playing Martell Rose, which I think has some really fun synergies and several power grab cards. Went 3-2-2 in both of the games. I took second in. I could have won if challenges had gone ever so slightly different, if I had challenged before the guy that won one game, or if somebody hadn't opted to redirect a challenge to stop me to give the win to a different guy. So, you know, some king making happens, but that's how it rolls. I still had a blast, and the winner of our event actually was playing what I would call just kind of a straight up control deck. It was a Baratheon Rose deck. Yeah, Rose definitely brought a little power grab to the table, but the Baratheon portion was very control-y. So I'll be throwing that list up online and talking some more about the event before long. But I think we're going to try to make Melee a more regular occurrence here because it seems like everybody really loves it. A lot of the newer players are really, really digging it, despite some of the first edition players really, really giving Melee grief.
Sounds like it was awesome. I really regret not being able to make it down. I'm going to be, like I said, just a week off on my schedule of travel, but I definitely, if you're going to be having regular Melee tournaments, I'm sure I'll catch one in my regular runs through on business. So hopefully the turnout and enthusiasm continues, because there definitely isn't enough Melee around.
Plus, we had some pretty sweet prizes. I think folks were very happy with the token boxes and whatnot. So I'll definitely be making more of those for future tournaments as we go. Maybe I'll make some of those to take on up to Isle Worlds here in a month.
Sounds like a great plan. It's going to be a real fun time. Those player run and created events, man. Can't beat them. They're super fun, and everybody gets creative and enthusiastic about them.
That's what I love, the creativity. And man, especially since we were just talking about this Bulgaria, some of the art and the effort to the various European metas. I mean, I know that there are American or North American, I know there's Canadian as well, metas that are putting some time and effort and money into alt art cards. But it really feels to me like the European metas just nail that consistently. Like, so many of them do that and, you know, have these sweet renditions of like all the houses commissioned year after year. And just, I think they really knock that out of the park.
Yeah, they are definitely on a whole different level. I know we mentioned on a couple of casts in a row, the Windy City Winter Cup in Chicago that we're going to be having. We've got some pretty sweet art on some of the prizes that we'll have there. Alternate art, Crown of Gold. And the runner-up playmat is from Battle of Ruby Ford. Shows Robert and Rhaegar and gives the line about, you know, Rhaegar fought valiantly, nobly, and Rhaegar died. So it's pretty cool for a second-place person. It's good stuff. I think you can see it on Facebook. But, yeah, anything that we do over here pales in comparison to the creativity and just quality of what they do over there. It's incredible.
Oh yeah. So, well, let's kick on over to other cool stuff created by Europeans. We're going to be debuting something this week, a new feature for the website, something I would like to continue doing as we move forward. But this one is penned by, or perhaps typed, I should say, by Tobias, that I mentioned previously as a patron of our Patreon. And he has put together a really sweet draft app for us. Now, this one is going to be available at draft.whitebookpodcast.com. It's going to have a significantly different interface from the rest of the site at the moment. We're going to be looking at getting that more integrated as we go forward, but I wanted to go ahead and get this out to the public and let folks start using it, because it is really sweet, and Tobias has been kind of waiting for quite a while as we got some various pieces lined up here. So go check it out.
Yeah, even though the interface is different, it looks really cool.
Yeah, I'm very happy with it, and you can get back to the main site with the logo in the corner there. So here it is. It is not the white book draft format that Greg pioneered back in the spring that we talked about on the show and have rules for on the site. This is actually yet another alternate format, and this one really trips my trigger, because I can sit here and click through and run the whole thing, at least for myself, right here. And basically what this does is adapt the Hearthstone arena style drafting to Game of Thrones. So for folks that are not aware of how that works, who haven't played Hearthstone, basically, when you start the draft, in our case here in Game of Thrones, you're gonna have a series of options of packs, basically, that are going to come up in front of you on the screen as you go. You're going to click on a card in each instance to pick which one you want to use. So, like, when you start, you're going to be presented with three house cards randomly pulled. You have to select one of those house cards. That's going to dictate the cards that come up for you for the rest of the draft, right? So after you pick that, you're then going to be presented with three random agendas. Those may be banners, maybe fealty, Lords of the Crossing, whatever. That is going to dictate the rest of the cards that come up for you in the draft. So say you pick Lannister and Banner of the Rose, everything that you see in the rest of your draft is going to be Lannister, Tyrell, or neutral. Or say you pick Targaryen and fealty, you're just going to get Targaryen and neutral cards as you go. So your decks do get a little more consistency than, let's say, your average booster draft, which is kind of fun. But it still forces you into some really hard picks, even in-house, that really, really kind of throws me off. So go ahead, Tommy.
Well, and you're still also always driven into those catch-22s of, am I looking to get another power card here, or is it better for my overall deck continuity to grab the event or to grab the economy card? You and I talked a little bit off the air about this, and even when you're pared down into those house selections, there are still a lot of challenging circumstances that will come up, and I'd rather have those type of decisions and be able to do a draft with a smaller group of people that have decks that actually are somewhat cohesive and create good games than, you know, have a truer draft experience in some instances.
Yeah. You do come out more cohesive in the end, but I think you're right that you still have those hard choices, because unlike a traditional booster draft, right, where you've got multiple people sitting around at a table, and, you know, I look at my 10 or 11 cards or however many, depending on the game you're playing, be that, you know, Thrones or Magic or something. You know, I'm looking at that pack, picking a card, passing, and that the remainder of that pack is probably coming back to me, right? So as the draft goes, you can start making some educated guesses on what cards you're going to table, as the term goes, and travel all the way around the table back to you, that you may be able to pick up again on the second rotation or third or whatever. This draft, however, does not have that. When you see those four cards that you're picking from and you choose one, there's no guarantee that you wind up seeing that card ever again. You may see, you know, eight Tywins or something, but you may not. If you're picking between Tywin and Tyrion, you know, and you grab that Tywin, that Tyrion is not necessarily coming back to you. It's a gamble. So those choices are still hard.
Yeah, instead of it being luck with a hint, it's straight up luck once you pass that one on.
Guided luck, maybe, because you're still funneled into those houses. So
sure.
It's, you know, there's the pluses and minuses to each version.
The other thing that I like is it doesn't, you know, predicate that there are draft-only cards included.
Yeah, agreed. You don't need anything extra special like that to make the format flow. It still operates with all the normal rules, 7 plots, 60-card deck, that type of thing, but forces, you know, you to make choices. So, like I said, you know, you're going to be picking from four cards per pick, or three if it's plots, and cycle all the way through until you have a whole deck constructed. So I think what Tommy and I were going to do is sit down here and walk through a draft on air and let folks kind of get a feel for how it works and what our decision making would be. and we'll see what we've got at the end, and I'll throw the list up with our episode, and everyone can take a look. Sound good?
Any excuse to run through another one.
Yeah, exactly. So let's get it rolling here. Okay, now, of course, Tommy is not able, much like you listeners, to see all of the cards available in a given pick, as I am able to see here on my screen. So I'm going to be running the draft, and I'm going to read out our picks as we go. Oh, sorry, our packs as we go, so Tommy can help me pick. So first up, we've got our house. Tommy, available to us, we have the Night's Watch, Greyjoy, and Tyrell. I'm going to say my vote's probably for Greyjoy main house. I think it's going to give us stronger options in a limited card pool.
That's exactly where I would go.
All right. Easy peasy there. Okay. Agenda-wise, ooh, you're going to love this one. Banner of the Kraken, Banner of the Dragon, or Banner of the Wolf?
I think we might differ here. What's your inclination?
This one is kind of tricky. The stuff I really like in this house pairing is the opposite way, but I do still like that Banner of the Dragon brings us a lot of cheap, efficient stuff at the low end of the curve. So I think that's probably my pick. But, you know, there's probably some interesting synergies with Banner of the Wolf that I'm just not thinking about at the moment.
And that's where my mind went first, was to Banner of the Wolf. But I'm willing to do either. My hierarchy would have been Wolf and Dragon.
not Kraken?
Well, I mean, if I was... if there's something to be said for that, because the way that this works, if you choose the Banner of the Kraken, you know that all you're seeing is Greyjoy cards.
Right.
So you will have the optimal, just straight up Greyjoy deck.
Your pool that you're building from will be basically as efficient as it gets.
But I think for the purpose of this exercise, like, if I was competing in a tournament, I would definitely entertain doing Greyjoy Kraken simply because I knew that I would have optimal choices. But for the purposes of this, like I said, if you want to do Targa, I'm fine with that.
No, I think, you know, as you said, kind of pushing our boundaries a little bit and getting used to some of these different options and ideas is part of this. So, you know, I'm willing to go Banner of the Wolf and kind of expand my perception of the pool here. So let's go with Wolf.
All right.
Well, that kicks us on to our first real pack, so to speak. And this one is Plots. We have three plots to choose from: March to the Wall, Summer Harvest, and Jousting Contest. And I know what my pick is out of the three of these, with only barely a bat of an eye at a secondary choice. But I really feel we need to grab March to the Wall while we can.
You know, in 9 times out of 10, I'm going to be right there with you. But given that we have selected Greyjoy, I might say Jousting Contest.
Really? See, Summer Harvest was the one that I barely thought about, because it does have the tendency to be a strong econ plot, and our resource base is not guaranteed in a draft, even a draft like this.
Don't disagree with you at all, and I, in fact, again, probably 7 or 8 out of 10 times, I'm going to be really tempted by that plot because I love economy assurance. And March to the Wall, both in 1.0 and 2.0, is one of my favorite plots that exists. But I feel like the chance of being able to have your stealth characters go off with Jousting Contest in a suboptimally built plot deck pool could be really strong.
Does Jousting Contest really help our stealth guys, though? Because it keeps us from using, say, both Asha and Theon.
Sure, but they can only put one guy in, right? So their optimal choice, you're stealthing.
Well, yeah.
And then you also have Balon, who could be potentially in a situation where they can only defend with one guy, and they, with your stealth, you can close down the only guy who could defend. I'm not saying it's the right choice. I'm just saying it's something that I would only ever likely entertain. You know.
Yeah, I just don't know that, like, locking out one or the other character when I'm already doing one or the other character via stealth. I just don't feel that jousting contests, like, say they've got two defenders. Well, I'm already stealthing their optimal choice.
Sure.
So, of course, they're defending with number two and only number two.
And there again, I think that my perception might be getting skewed because this isn't a traditional draft pool where if you're able to neutralize two characters in a standard draft environment, you're probably winning whatever you want to win.
Yeah.
But this is a pool where, you know, your opponents are going to have decks built similar to yours that are, you know, funneled into those houses. So I'm not saying that this is the choice that I want to make. I'm just saying that it's interesting that I would consider it here because it's not the one that I would often look at. With gotcha. March to the Wall being my favorite and being high initiative, I'm of course gonna in the end go with you on that. I just wanted to throw it out there as a point of discussion.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, for what it's worth, yes, March is my vote.
And mine.
One, because I think it's a power plot. Two, as you said, the initiative goes very well with what Greyjoy wants to do. And three, in any sort of draft, even this style of draft, I think opponents are less likely to be concerned that, you know, their opponent was able to grab a March to the Wall and are more likely to put themselves
take
in a position
risk.
Where
yep.
that blows them out. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I think we go that way and try to capitalize on March to the Wall.
Without a doubt. I'm there. Just,
okay.
You know, throwing out those points.
Sounds good. Well, that sends us into our first, let's say, draw deck pack. We have available Knighted, Priest of the Drowned God. That's the one that gives each Drowned God character you control plus one. Then the Wolf's Wood and the King Balin Greyjoy. The seven cost. Oh, this is tough. Yeah, this is really tough. As much as I know we're going to need some beater characters, I hate to say it, but I sort of want to hedge my bets that we grab either Euron in the seventh cost slot later or the core set six drop Balin instead. And I sort of want to nab just kind of a cheapy mid range on
God.
What would be an off icon for both of these houses with that intrigue.
Yeah, I'm there with you.
You are? Okay.
Absolutely.
All right, that's not bad. Okay, that kicks us to our next one. This one gets tricky. We have the seven cost King Balin again. Dang, we could have had a duplicate. Then Fishing Net, Winterfell Steward, and Turning Grounds. I'll let you make your case first on this one.
In draft, I'm going to go Fishing Net.
I thought about that. That's a strong option. Really, really knocks it's out.
Next best thing to removal, right?
Yeah. The other one that had me kind of wondering, though, was the Winterfell Steward.
Yep.
Just again, based on I don't know how we're going to do resource-wise, and I know we're going to need that claim chud and setup potential.
If it was the Fishmonger, I would have probably taken it.
Yeah, just not as high on the priority list when it's the off house.
Not against Fishing Net. I mean,
okay. Yeah, no, I'm with you on Fishing Net. Let's grab that.
Sweet.
Okay. Next pack, we have Arya Stark. This is the Wolf's Box 4 cost one. Then Street of Sisters, Wildling Scout, and Jory Cassell. Not seeing too much on the Greyjoy front here, which makes me personally lean towards the flexibility
of the scout.
But I think Arya still has some potential for us. She is another form of removal, though I've never been a big fan of her kind of anti-card advantage.
Yeah, I've only liked her in niche applications, and I think that the Wildling Scout is a strong card in a lot of instances, especially, you know, we're still hoping that our deck is going to turn out with a, you know, relatively Greyjoy-esque theme. So having another way to get stealth and having another intrigue icon is definitely what we're looking for, in my opinion.
Okay, let's do it. All right, next pack, and your first talk is going to be Bodyguard, Nymeria, Street of Steel, and Tourney Grounds. How's that for a crap pack?
It's Bodyguard or Tourney Grounds for me.
Yeah. And I just don't know how we're going to wind up event-wise in the end, especially knowing if we see more fishing nets, we're probably pretty likely to grab those. So I'm a little wary about using Tourney Grounds in particular to try to supplement our income this early in the draft. So I think I'm with you on Bodyguard. Okay. And we just keep our eyes peeled for Lords and Ladies as we go.
As you will in this card pool.
Yes, almost certainly. All right, here we are again. This pack is Nymeria again. Then Aeron Damphair, Great John's Vanguard, and the Drowned God's Blessing. This is tough. While you were just talking about us kind of wanting to have that kind of Greyjoy theme as we go here, which makes me think about Aeron. I'm just not quite certain I can push the dominance thing as much as I want yet. And I know Great John's Vanguard is a beater for the first three turns of the game. Five costs for six strength with two icons and renown. Oh, and no attachments, just in case. Is just a beat stick early.
I agree on that one.
All right, so you're with me on picking the Vanguard. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and move on to the next pack then. This one's back to Tommy's choice. We see the four-cost Wolf's Box Arya Stark again, and that pack gets a little more interesting. We've got Varys, Captain's Daughter, and Priest of the Drowned God. What are your thoughts here?
It's tough to not say yes to Varys. But I'm not
it is
sure
tough.
That it fits what we're looking to do.
Exactly. I mean, it still sort of fits, but I don't know for sure we're going to be able to push to afford him on the turns. We really need him. Not sure he fits with what Greyjoy wants to do in general. Captain's Daughter is a fairly strong card. But on the other hand, if we can pull several Priests of the Drowned God, like, we could have some beefy dudes for cheap.
Yep. And especially since you have a little bit of economy concern.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be a little bit of possum effect here too, because we're starting to get in this far in, we're starting to get relatively strong for a Greyjoy deck and Greyjoy Stark at that, at intrigue.
Yes, exactly.
So I'm with you. Let's go with that one. Go with efficiency. Though there is something
to
be said.
Go for the priest?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, let's
okay.
do that. But I think there is something to be said for the Captain's Daughter, simply because there's going to be a lot of non-loyal cards, obviously, flying around. But
she's a strong control option. You know, it's temporary removal, but it is removal.
It is. But I prefer things that are less conditional. And, you know, in a situation where you just need to get a guy out, which often happens in draft games, she's expensive, one icon, low strength, and
yeah.
Priest of the Drowned God, I mean, you're starting to build some synergy already.
Okay, well, let's do that then. All right, next pack then. I think now that I've looked at it, there's one easy answer out of it. So tell me I guess it's my first voice here. So we have Ahead of the Tide, Raider from Pike, Winterfell Kennel Master, and Milk of the Poppy. And I really think the pick has to be Milk of the Poppy to take out somebody else's bomb.
There's no discussion.
Yeah. too big in a draft game to milk their Tywin or whatever.
No matter what draft format you're talking about, if you get a chance to have Milk of the Poppy, I think that, because the ways to deal with Milk of the Poppy are that much harder to get.
Exactly. Okay. All right, this pack's to you. We have Superior Claim, Great Kraken, Sirio's Training, and Black Wind's Crew.
Well, I'm a little bit of a riverboat gambler when it comes to this stuff, so I'm going to say the Great Kraken, because I'm hoping upon hope that I'm going to be able to set this up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and even if we don't get Balin, like, it's trigger working off of any unopposed challenge we get.
For sure.
I think is just too huge. It's card advantage, which is something that we're not necessarily going to see coming our way again. So I think we need to grab it when we can.
But I think if you were going completely safe, maybe you take the Black Wind's Crew. Not sure, but I think that that's the pick for me is the Kraken. So
yeah, I mean, at some point we need to make sure we have a sizable character base, but I don't think we're quite that desperate yet.
Agreed.
All right, so back to me on this one. We see another Captain's Daughter, a We Do Not Sow, the Kraken's Grasp, and Winterfell Heart Tree. I think my vote's probably for We Do Not Sow here. While I do think Kraken's Grasp could be potentially a very strong combat trick in draft, the flexible removal of We Do Not Sow, particularly for something like, say, Milk of the Poppy, like we were just talking about, doesn't always come along.
See, We Do Not Sow would be my pick if this was, you know, if we were just doing a regular deck build. But I think Kraken's Grasp, in, like you were saying, in this type of format, I think you can really have some blowouts and potentially some game-flipping opportunities that you might not be able to easily get otherwise. Zero-cost stuff in a difficult economy situation, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's a pretty fair point with the zero cost. All right, I think you've convinced me to give it a try here. Though, listeners, let it be noted that I really like We Do Not Sell.
I'm with you. I'm very closely torn. I mean, I would, in a constructed format, 9 times out of 10, I'm choosing We Do Not Sell, but I think that zero cost and potential blowout factor in a draft pool is just really big. And people aren't going to be able to construct their general cancel and reaction packages that you're used to seeing, you know? People
right.
are dealing with these same conditions, right?
Okay. Well, let's nab Grasp then and see what the next one back to you says. Okay, here you go. You have the Starkbox Sansa Stark. Not the Stark box, the Corset one. Enters play now, gains power when she stands. Then we have Septa Mordain, Varys again, and the House Tully Septon.
I'm kind of first instinct feeling like I want to take Sansa, to be honest with you.
I think so. We're becoming really intrigue heavy, like you said. But I think in a vacuum, it's really only a choice between her and Varys. The other two, especially, you know, when you start looking at things, they need other specific cards to work.
Right. And I don't think that we can make, because of the route that we've taken, I don't think we can make Varys work. If we had taken the first Varys and got a second, maybe we have something interesting going. But I also don't feel confident in our ability to play out multiple copies of Varys.
Agreed. Or necessarily have like duplicates to try and weather him offensively ourselves or something.
Well, and that's the other way of dealing with it, right? Is if you feel like you can afford multiple copies of Varys, you just then, from that point on, draft all non-unique chuds, right?
Yeah.
You just are storming the board. But I think we would have had to make our choices differently.
Okay, so let's grab Sansa, and then let's see. Ooh, so back to, let's see, whose pick is this one?
I think this is your first call.
Okay, here we go. We're into plots again now. So we've got Rise of the Kraken, Snowed Under, and a second Marched to the Wall. And I admit I am having a terrifying time choosing. I can see a reasonable argument for all three of these right now. Who expects two March to the Walls in draft?
I have no hesitancy in going with that. Winning initiative and having two marched, I mean, come on. I love Kraken, but I don't think that it's better than having two marched.
Okay.
If we didn't have the first one, I'm taking Kraken over it.
Right.
But because we have the opportunity to blast two on somebody.
Yeah, yeah. It just feels too good to pass up, even though part of me loves the gold and the kind of initiative manipulation of Snowed Under, which could be worked in our favor. And Rise of the Kraken with the initiative and the claim and the power grab. Ugh. Jeez. But yeah, no, I think you're right.
Especially since March. We're starting to get a little intrigue. You're popping off guys from their board with your plots, and we potentially could be winning intrigue challenges at this point.
Yeah, exactly. We might just really be attritioning them out. Okay, so here we are with the next pack, your first call. We have Seal of the Hand, Support of the People, River Run, and Aaron Dampair.
Well, I think with our selections of the priests, we got to go with Aaron here, right?
Maybe. We've got that single Great Kraken in here, though. Part of me thinks, man, having that support of the people to go grab that could be huge.
But winning by the differential, I'm not convinced we're going to consistently do, right?
Maybe not. We haven't seen any of the stealth stuff really yet.
Or the only thing we power characters, for that matter.
Yeah. Yeah, we passed up on those two seven-cost balance, and now I'm almost regretting it.
Right, but I'm starting to hedge towards an efficiency build here, and you know that's why I felt like, based on the choices we've made, Aaron's kind of the guy for us.
Yeah, another Drown God character. And then at that point, if supported people comes up again, it starts looking more favorable because we're getting more of these power icons that are going to be pumped by the priests.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, let's grab Aaron then. Okay. Back to me then with Old Nan, Maester Lewin, another fishing net, and Lady. And I think your same argument before still applies. To grab fishing net, plus the rest of these cards are, you know, like we said with some of the others, really need specific other things to work. So
I agree. And I mean, as we've been saying about March to the Wall, intrigue heavy, and now with two fishing nets and a Milk of the Poppy, we're really neutralizing what they can get on the board. We're eliminating other characters. I mean, crazy enough, we're starting to almost get control-y here.
Yeah, yeah, I was not expecting this to go a control direction, but I think it really is. Okay, so back to you on the next pack then gives us Street of Steel, The Dragon's Tale, Sea Tower, and Hedge Knight.
Do I remember right off the top of my head, is Sea Tower their reducer?
Yes.
Then I think we probably need to go there.
I think you're right. Now that we finally saw one, 12 cards in,
right.
We really ought to grab that resource while we can.
Yeah.
Okay, next one's back to me. We've got Healing Expertise, Great John's Vanguard, Iron Island's Fishmonger, and Vanguard of the North. I admit this one's tough for me between the Fishmonger and the Great John's Vanguard. Part of me does love having the in-faction reducer and chud and setup capability of the Fishmonger. But as we said before, that Great John's Vanguard is an early game beat stick. And part of me thinks having two of them in the deck wouldn't be bad.
I kind of agree with you.
And we sort of need another military icon.
Yeah, I mean, we need another strong character. I like the consistency of it. You know, we're going to know that there's two of them in there. And I don't know. Non-unique is good.
You want to do it? You want to push for it?
It's really tough between that and the Fishmonger, though.
Yeah, jeez. But gosh.
Especially since we just took the Reducer for Greyjoy as well. I mean, had that been a Heartree or something, maybe I'd feel different? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But if we grab the Vanguard, we're definitely going to need to be looking at these plots as we go forward. Because the two we have right now only provide four gold.
I feel like if we take the Fishmonger, we leave our options a little more open.
That is true. Yeah, this is pick 14.
Yeah.
So are you saying Fishmonger in the end is where you'd go?
I think, at the end of the day, I think that's where I'm going to go. Okay. Though I'm still really tempted by the Vanguard, but I think that's the right play.
Okay. Well, back to you then with Street of Steel, Bodyguard, Ours is the Old Way, and Aeron Damphair. Well, I think I can guess what you're going to push for.
I think it's got to be Aeron, no?
I think it probably does, though I do want to point out something interesting about Street of Steel, which lets us search for a weapon or item. And at some point here, that might be semi-practical to search out fishing nets.
Maybe I forgot about that. I didn't realize that it was item as well. Because I guess I've never played this net deck. But we can't win a military challenge.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's got to be Aeron.
Okay. I mean, that's fair.
He's our only... I guess Sansa's a target. I was going to say he's our only target for our bodyguard.
Yeah. Well, I figure we'll get more as we go.
I hope.
Okay. So back to me on this one with Tithe, Winterfell Steward, another copy of the core set Sansa Stark, and Green Dreams. Again, this is where I'm in a tough spot between another copy of a character we already have or the Reducer. The other two I don't think we need to worry about right now, but there's a decent argument for both of those.
I think you could guess where I am.
Are you going to say Sansa? Because I'm leaning towards the Steward?
No, I'm definitely the Steward for efficiency.
Yeah. And plus, we know if we can get him out and keep him alive for a turn, then we can use him plus the March the Wall Gold to be able to play the Great John's Vanguard.
That's
so,
the idea, right?
All right. We'll go that way. All right. Back to you for Septim Ordain. Ours is the Old Way, Lordsport Shipwright, and Direwolf Pup. Yeah.
What weird cards.
I know, right?
I think it's got to be the Shipwright.
I think so, too. Part of me wants the pup for the military icon, but there's not a good guarantee we get more direwolves to really push that, I think.
It's another intrigue icon. It's another Ironborn. We're so efficient.
And another control card.
Yeah, we can kneel down their location. I mean, Jesus. This is so weird.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's grab it. All right, back to me. Raider from Pike. The seven cost King Balin Greyjoy, okay. Danella Hornwood, and Winterfell Heartree. Now, part of me does like giving those fishing nets ambush. Part of me likes that Danella is some potential income. But I hate to say it, I think at this point I do want to grab that King Balin to have something in the deck at the top of that curve.
I could go that way, but I think that my first inclination would be the Raider.
And just really try to leverage that he's another cheap guy and gives us flexibility.
Well, not only that, but I mean, like you said, ambushing in those fishing nets, I mean, you've had a dude marched, you've got a guy milked, boom, here's a fishing net on the only guy you have left. I don't know.
All right. I'm willing to go that way. Like I said, I was tempted by him to begin with, so that's the way you want to go. I'm in.
And that Balon just doesn't do anything for me, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, he's not great. He's not great.
Not
well.
And we're not in a position to be paying $7 for anything right now.
Well, that's true. We really aren't. We're going to need to stumble on to a noble cause or trading with Bentoshi or something to make that viable.
Right. I don't know that I'm going to draft anything like that unless it's, you know, six-cost Balon without knowing that I can afford it.
Yeah, I would pick him up.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. But I'm feeling good about our efficiency, and now we're just kind of trying to, oddly enough, hammer down the bombs, which it usually goes the opposite way in a draft.
Yeah. Well, here's one for you. next pack is yours. Still looking for bombs, but I'll tell you what we have. Throwing Axe, Wildling Scout, a third Fishing Net, and Hedge Knight.
Well,
tell me you're going to do what I hope you're
going
to do.
I'm going with the fishing net.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I'm balls deep on this control, man.
Yeah. All right.
Nobody's going to know what to do with this. They're going to be shocked that they don't know what they're playing against.
Not your typical Greyjoy Wolf deck at all.
Honestly, you get one more Milk of the Poppy, and I mean, you've really got some screwy shit going on here. Between those those attachments and two marched, I mean, damn. If we can get ourselves a first snow, oh boy.
Ooh, well, that might really muck with our character base at the moment, though.
I don't know that we necessarily care, though, because their big characters that are staying in play are all going to have the attachments on them.
Yeah, probably so.
Building orders would be great, too.
Yes. Okay. Well, here we go. Next pack gives us Wolf Dreams, The Kraken's Grasp, another Lordsport Shipwright, and Hearttree Grove. And at the moment, while I'm equally in some ways tempted by Grasp and Hearttree Grove for another combat track or another income card, I think continuing to play up our control options here with the Shipwright looks the most interesting to me.
I think that would be where I would go, though. The Grasp would tempt me as well.
Yeah.
But okay. Yeah, I think let's go with the Shipwright.
All right. Well, here we go. Back to you for some plot choices. We have Supporting the Faith, Sneak Attack, and Wraiths in Their Midst.
Let's see. Supporting the Faith is 6-2-1. I don't think we can afford a 4 reserve, though.
Yeah, plus it gets rid of gold when the challenge phase starts, meaning if we do get that raider, we can't ambush in stuff like we were hoping to.
Right.
But on the other hand, we can still play something like Kraken's Grasp. But yeah, I don't know. The reserve does seem the most worrying.
I'm surprised, but I think I actually want to go Sneak Attack.
I think so, too. It's going to be our highest gold plot. We're going to do something with the two-play initiative. Yeah.
And in this deck, oddly enough, I think we're going to make our opponents go first.
Mm-hmm.
Play out their guys and put attachments on them.
Yep. Hey, and with stuff like those fishing nets, we can really try to ensure the one challenge we get out of Sneak Attack is one that connects.
Yep. Without a doubt.
Okay, back to me. Oh, here we go. This is going to be a fast one. We've got Cirio Pharrell, The Hand's Judgment, Balon Greyjoy. This is the six-cost core set version, and Seal of the Hand.
Done.
I think we both agree, Balon, move on.
Yep. That All is right. the dude that I'm looking for.
Well, here's one for you then. Kraken's Grasp. Euron Crow's Eye, River Run Minstrel, and Sirio's Training.
I think at this point we have to take the Euron, no?
I think you're right. We kind of hedge our bets. If we see another Euron, I'm not sure we grab him.
I don't think so either.
We definitely are still going to need some income, but he is one of the bombs we've been looking for still. All right, back to me with Throwing Axe, Wolf Dreams, another attempt at support of the people, and Ahead of the Tide. I think in this one, as much as I sort of like the Throwing Axe for removal and the possible overlap with the Raider, I think I'm pushing for that support of the people now. We've got a few more drowned characters. We've got more ways to try and keep them from defending the power in the fishing nets and that Balin now, that I think I feel pretty good. Plus, if we do hit the Balin, we really want to go get Great Kraken to go with him.
Yeah, I'll go with you on it, though I won't say that I'm actually not tempted a little bit by Ahead of the Tide.
I think we've got initiative in the bag.
I think we do too, but simply just for the deck thinning and the efficiency, right? I mean, it's a zero cost. We're going to draw a card to replace it. And in the instance where we need that initiative to win the game, it could potentially come in handy. I don't see a lot of instances where I'm like, oh, I would actually play this card. But given what our three plots are right now, I could see it. I don't know. I'm still going to go with the support of the people, but I just was very surprised with myself that I was even considering that card.
Well, here's one for you. I think this is going to be an easy pick for you. You've got Winterfell Hartree, Tourney Grounds, Tears of Lys, and Frozen Solid.
Is it easy, though? I mean, that Frozen Solid throws a hook in there.
It does, but with our character base and all those intrigue icons, it's got to be tiers.
It is. It obviously is. But, I mean, it's always hard to turn away a Frozen.
It is. It is.
But, yeah, it's definitely tiers.
Okay, back to me now with Needle, Greyjoy's Vanguard, the Wolfswood, and Tourney Grounds. And I think it's a no-brainer out of these to grab another Vanguard.
Yep.
Okay.
On that.
All right. Back to you.
We would have three, though.
Yeah. Is it three? No, that gives us number two.
No, if we had taken that other one instead of the fishmonger, though.
Oh, right. Yes.
So, all right. Let's go.
Okay, so you've got Aeron Damphair, Little Bird, Noble Lineage, and Gates of Winterfell.
Huh. I think I want the Aeron, right?
I think so, but do we need the third? Or would it be better to look at... Well, geez, I don't know. The two attachments overlap on the icons we're heaviest
exactly.
on. Gates is not going to be reliable enough. I guess it has to be Aeron, even though I'm not convinced we really want a third one. He's probably the most practical pick out of these four.
I mean, I would certainly have considered the Lineage, but I just don't feel like... are we no attachments on Greyjoy and Vanguard? Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be Aeron.
Okay. Well, back to me then, and I think this is an easy choice for me. Little Bird, Iron Island's Fishmonger, Superior Claim, and Black Wind's Crew. And I think I still want the Fishmonger.
Absolutely.
Okay, back to you. Ooh, this one may be tough. You've got Raider from Pyke, Gates of Winterfell, Ward, and Black Wind's Crew.
I think, based on the cost curve, I want the Black Wings crew. Ward is really tempting, but I can't see a scenario where we can afford a four-cost attachment.
I mean, he gains us a character, though. He's basically playing a four-cost character.
And we were talking about going second. All right, yeah, you sold me. Okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
Man. So many.
Yeah, this is super weird, but it's just crazy control. Like, we knock off whatever little reducer they have got on the board to a marched, then we ward like whatever mid range they have. Now our military challenge is killing, you know, something beefy.
Well, and that was the thing that really drew me there, was the military icon. But it's an Ironborn that goes with our Aeron. It's a military icon. But I think you're right. I think the ward is the play.
And they probably don't have the removal for it. It's probably a near permanent steal.
Yep, exactly. Okay, I'm in.
Okay, so then we've got up next, I guess this one's back to me, Nymeria, Superior Claim. The Corset Arya Stark and Great Kraken. As much as I sort of like a second copy of Great Kraken, I think our efficiency build says Corset Arya with her stealth and built-in duplicate is too good to pass up.
Yep, that's where I am too. Especially since we've now taken the support of the people, I feel better rolling with the single Kraken.
Right, and
maybe we'll get
and Arya's stealth can helpfully. Hopefully help trigger us it. Play it.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Back to you. Oh, here you go. Another Corset Arya Stark, Direwolf Pup, Stereo Pharrell, or Fast Eddie. That's the Wolfbox Eddard Stark.
As much as I want Fast Eddie, I think Stereo is better for what we're doing, right?
Is Stereo or is a second Arya?
Okay, so the reason that I say Sirio is because we have a lot of guys that don't have military icons, so adding that icon is key. And giving stealth to anybody that we want to, super good.
And he's a little cheaper.
Sneak attack. Sneak attack, we
can
play Sirio. We're going first. We're stealthing. We're two claiming.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I can be talked into that. Especially the flexibility of giving out some military icons.
If we had gotten a noble cause or a trading or something, I probably would have gone Fast Eddie, but
yeah,
I think where we sit right now, I don't know.
Okay, I'm on board with Syria.
Okay,
so let's see. That one was your choice. Back to me now for some new plots. We've got Taxation, Ranger's Cash, and Confiscation. This is legitimately tough. We were just talking about, you know, the low odds on actually having attachment removal. So part of me thinks hedging our bets and or surprising our opponent with confiscation could be good. But then that's gambling that they have the attachments that we want to get rid of. Ranger's Cash is nice for the draw or income flexibility. We could, you know, kind of bank this and having 7 gold on our March to the Wall the next turn or something. Or Taxation is just really reasonable stats all around. I don't think the limited thing really comes into play for us the way our pool is looking at the moment. But I think the 5 gold is probably what sells me on it as our choice.
Well, I'm leaning towards Taxation myself. Both that and Ranger's Cash, which is the other thing that I'm considering, they're both 6 reserve, and that one gives you 3 gold on top of whatever your next plot is. So, I mean, we could be looking at an 8 with Sneak Attack, we could be looking at a 7 with our March to the Walls, so I think there's some value there, especially if it's your leadoff plot. But I think if we're able to grab a few more limiteds, Taxation becomes really good. We stay with a strong initiative base on all of our plots. So if you feel strongly about Taxation, I'm in on it.
I think it checks off enough of our boxes, even though it's not as flexible as Ranger's Cash.
Cool. All right, then Taxation. Let's do that.
All right. Here we go back to you with As Hard as Winter, Put to the Torch, Raiding Longship, and Littlefinger.
I think we gotta have Littlefinger, no?
I think so. Part of me is torn about Raiding Longship since we have such good initiative, but with all our attachments, we want our opponent to go first most of the time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And right. that income and card draw, we're still kind of lacking there. So,
agreed. And hey, he still hits those intrigue icons that we've been hitting so hard.
Yep.
Okay. Next up, we have back to me the Seastone Chair, Great Kraken, Winterfell Hearttree, and Arya Stark. Again, the four cost Wolf Box one. I think I actually do vote Seastone Chair. We're not real heavy on military icons right now.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I think we're flexible enough to try and push it, and all it takes is one good trigger from this to just blow a game open.
Yep.
All right.
But does that say with no attachments?
You know, I believe so, but I think yep. I just closed it out. Yeah.
So are we going to be screwing ourselves with it?
We'll see.
I'm still willing to take the chance on it. I think it's a good pick. It's good for setup. And that potential blowout is still worth it, but that would be really ironic after all of our attachment prep.
Yeah.
But let's roll with it.
Okay. So goes back to you with House Tully Septon, Euron Crow's Eye, Winterfell Castle, and Captain's Daughter.
This one, I feel like it's got to be the daughter, but I kind of want to get the dupe for Euron because we're just not seeing the bombs that we want.
We're not. Oh.
The Tricon fits really well in what we're trying to do.
Agreed. I think it does. And if we're hitting their hand, maybe we're knocking a location out that we can get back, you know, even aside from his pillage. So I'm willing to go with him. But I think that's going to force our hand on picks going forward to up our econ base.
Yep. Though I feel much better having just gotten the Littlefinger.
Yes, agreed. All right. Let's see, back to me with Shaggy Dog, Risen from the Sea, Lordsport Shipwright, and another Seastone Chair. I don't think I want a second Seastone Chair for reasons you illustrated. And I think we're pretty set on the Shipwrights, but a surprise save from Risen from the Sea could be very handy.
Yeah, there's no conversation there for me.
And I guess unless, you know, Shaggy Dog is some efficiency, 2 for 3...
Nothing more efficient than negating military claim.
Yeah. All right, Risen then?
Yeah.
Plus, we just don't have much in the way of events right now. We do need to have some surprises.
And I also don't necessarily fear that there's going to be that. I mean, with a zero cost, I'm often fearing that hand's judgment, right? But I don't think that there's going to be enough of it to consistently screw us, right?
Yeah. Agreed. All right, back to you for Rattleshirt's Raiders, River Run, Ahead of the Tide, and Street of Silk.
Hmm. Probably Rattleshirt's Raiders?
I think so. It's still a character that helps us round that base out. It does have that military icon that we're light on, and it you know, while we can't guarantee that there's a trigger for him, like, he's not...
At least we have an answer.
Yeah.
Others may not.
Yeah, and he could still sit on the board and make, you know, 3 military challenges before there's a card, like, that he needs to be triggered on. And
right.
It doesn't necessarily feel like it's a waste.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's the right choice.
Okay. Let's see, back to me then with Ahead of the Tide, King Balin, Pike, and Young Spearwife. That's got to be Pike, right? Giving, as you were saying with Sirio earlier, giving stealth out at our whim is pretty much perfect.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Okay, oh, I'm giving you a tough choice here, Tommy. We've got The Rose Road, Core set, six cost Balin, Ahead of the Tide, and Little Bird. What do you do?
It's got to be Balon.
Even over that Rose Road. Even after we picked up another Euron.
Yeah. Because push comes to shove, I don't play the other Euron.
Okay.
Let's I'd rather have two Balons than two Eurons.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, definitely. All right. We'll grab him. Back to me, we have the Wolf's Wood, Core Set, 7 cost Eddard Stark, Street of Silk, and Seal of the Hand. And I think I'm probably taking Seal out of this and hoping we can get it on one of those Balons. I don't want to push up to another expensive character and the locations just do nothing.
What was the first card? I couldn't hear you.
The Wolf's Wood.
Yeah, I think I agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah, the locations just do nothing for this deck. So, Seal. Alright, here you go, Tommy. Your choice on Wolf Dreams, Sea Tower, Captain's Daughter, and Risen from the Sea.
Now that's tough. Between the Sea Tower and the Risen, but I think at this point we have to go with the Sea Tower. Especially since we have Taxation.
I'm 100% with you. All right, back to me. Man, I cannot believe how many times the King Balin Greyjoy has come up. Whew, yeah, here he is again. Then Maester's Chain, Little Bird, and Bran. The cheap cancel here, I think, is huge for us. Bran it is for me.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt.
All right, you ready for a plot choice, Tommy?
Absolutely.
All right, here you go. Jousting Contest, Reigns of Autumn, or, wait for it, Building Orders.
Well, I think you've just given our answer.
Yeah, the exact plot that you said earlier that you wanted to see.
Yep. I mean, now, given our location selections on top of our attachment selections, we're pretty versatile here.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. Back to me here with Throwing Axe, Dragon's Tail, Arya Stark, and the Corset Balin Greyjoy.
Which Arya?
The Corset Arya.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, I was iffy on the second Balin because of what he was up against. But at this point, I think nabbing that third one and giving us that consistency is
got to
awesome.
Go all in. Agreed.
Yeah. Okay, back to you with Young Spearwife, Gates of Winterfell, Raiding Longship, and Maester's Chain.
I guess here we got to go with the Raiding Longship, no?
Maybe Young Spearwife is at least a body, which kind of pushes me towards it. We're at 41 total cards and only 25 characters at the moment. So,
we
I don't know. We've still got several cards.
So.
That's fair. All right, I'm willing to take it in this instance. Okay, it goes back to me for Pyromancers, Salty Navigator, Great Kraken, and Captain's Daughter. Even with that Building Orders, I think I push for the Salty Navigator here.
I do too.
Because little cheaper than the Wildling was last pick, and you know, being in-house and with that initiative boost, I think plays into our stuff a little more directly than
as
she
well
did,
as an
so.
Ironborn.
Yes. Oh yeah, we do need some of those for Dampier, don't we?
Yep. Although I think we're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
We picked up quite a few between the Shipwrights, the Balons, Eurons.
We got there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here's one for you. Winterfell Steward, Cirio Pharrell, The King's Road, or We Do Not Sow.
It's got to be The King's Road.
Yeah. Steward, I hardly knew ye, but it's got to be The King's Road. Okay, back to me. We have Dagmar Cleftjaw, Tourney Grounds, the Corset Sansa Stark, and Loot. think Corset Sansa?
I think I agree.
Yeah, Clefjaw's just not great. Loot's a bad event. Yeah, he's expensive. Our event base just doesn't really support turning grounds.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, back to you for the Iron Throne. We do not sow. Loot again. And Winterfell Kennel Master.
You think I'm going Iron Throne?
Really? Just for that extra reserve?
No, for the 8th strength, for dominance.
Oh, to trigger our 3 damn pairs. That's probably a good call.
Not only to trigger him, but I mean, I feel like, say that we run up against a deck that just is swarming tons of dudes out there. I mean, imagining a Lannister Rose build or something like that, where, you know, they've got tons of guys, tons of strength, tons of leftover money. We don't want to be giving up dominance every single turn. And I think, additionally, being able to reap that benefit of triggering Dampair, I don't know. I think it plays into the efficiency that we've been talking about all along.
Yeah, I think Dampair is what sells it for me, especially when we've got 3 of him in the deck. Yeah. I definitely want to be able to trigger him.
For sure.
Okay, that was your pick, right?
Yep.
Okay, back to me with the Corset Eddard Stark. Needle, Winterfell Kennelmaster, and Drowned God's Blessing. And actually at this point, I think I say Drowned God's Blessing, since we've got those 3 priests.
Yep.
To try and get that, or sorry, 2 priests, but still, to try and get that boost on somebody else, maybe preferably a Balin, but I think it could do something for us.
Yeah.
Okay, back to you with the Winterfell Steward, Arya's Gift, Captain's Daughter, and Tourney Grounds.
It's got to be the Steward.
Yeah, I think so. We just need to round out those kind of cheap bodies and income there. Okay, back to me for Young Spearwife, Jon Snow, Septa Mordain.
Which Jon Snow?
One that we could have here at the start.
Yeah, sorry.
Yep. Septa Mordain and Seal of the Hand. I think Seal is more flexible for us in general, though I do kind of like John. Potentially stand those vanguards.
I think we're at a critical here with attachments, though. We've got.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. We may be at our cap. And only 28 characters.
I mean,
maybe we do need to take John.
Unless I see another Milk of the Poppy, I'm probably not taking another attachment, in my opinion.
Okay. All right. So, do you agree John out of the characters, then? Or do the Spear Wife or Septa Mordain
sound better? I think we go with John. Especially since we've got a Bran.
Alrighty. Then, let's see. That kicks it back to you with Dragon's Tale, Maester's Chain, Salty Navigator, and Winterfell Hearttree.
Gotta be the Hearttree, right?
No, because I think you're probably thinking of the Reducer, right?
Oh, yeah, I am. I'm definitely.
This is the one that gives him. You sacrifice to give immunity to opponent's plot effects.
Yeah, no, we don't want that.
Yeah.
Huh.
It's probably the Navigator, right?
Yep.
Okay. I kind of wound up picking that one in the end, so I'll give you this one too. We're back to plots. This is going to be between Winds of Winter, Wraiths in Their Midst, and A Storm of Swords.
I think I'm going Winds.
Yeah, I think so too. I kind of hate that our gold stays so low, but
between having 2 marshes and a surprise 2 claim.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, 2 marched and 2 claims. Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
It kind of makes me wish that we had taken the Ranger's cache, though.
Yeah.
Set up either one of those two claimers.
That would have been sweet.
So this one's you.
Yep. Great Kraken, the Reader, the Wolfswood, and Fish Whiskers. I think I like the potential draw of the Reader.
Absolutely. And more intrigue. Pile it on.
Yep. Okay, back to you then for another Bran Stark. Support of the People, Superior Claim, or River Run?
What was the first one? I couldn't hear that.
It was Bran Stark.
Oh, it's got to be the other Bran.
Yeah, I think so too. Too awesome to have two cancels at our behest. Okay, back to me for Winterfell Castle, Maester's Chain, the King's Road, and Sea Tower. And I think I want the King's Road here, so we've got at least two of these two different income locations.
Yep.
Rather than going to three Sea Towers.
Totally agree. We've got some, I mean, between Cereo and Littlefinger, it's nice to have the reducers for the non-uniques.
Yes, or, I'm sorry, exactly.
We're unaligned or neutrals or whatever you want to call them.
Then back to you here for the Kraken's Grasp, Bran Stark, Varys, and Little Bird.
I'm on the third Bran.
Really? Okay, I wondered if you'd go with Kraken's Grasp, but I can be talked into the third Bran for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there again, especially since we have Jon.
Gives us some cheap options to ditch for Jon, yep. And, you know, something that
it's still replaying.
We don't feel too bad about actually triggering him to cancel something if we're, you know, kind of iffy on it because we've got more. Yeah. Okay. Next up, back to me for Iron Fleet Scout, Arya's Gift, Street of Steel, and Septa Mordain. As weird as it is, I think at this point, I'm tempted to grab the Septa to kind of help out our character base. And we do have multiple Sansas, right? Just one Arya. I don't know. The Iron Fleet Scout gives us some setup options, too, I suppose.
Yeah, it's her, the Scout, for me as well. I can be talked into either way. You pick this one.
I think keeping our character base higher is probably the best call in draft.
I think it's the right sitting here.
Okay, back to you for Lordsport Shipwright. Another Great John's Vanguard, Ahead of the Tide, or Pyromancers?
I think I'm going to go with the Vanguard.
I think so, too. It's still kind of pushing our overall curve up a little bit, but just another great beat stick, and we don't really need any of the other stuff.
And I like the ability to have three of them in there so that we have the consistency and up our odds of seeing it early game.
Right, since it's most potent in the early turns.
Yep. And we do still need that military strength a little bit.
Yes. Okay, back to me here for Wolf Dreams, The King's Road, Put to the Sword, and Iron Fleet Scout. As much as I like the direct shot of Put to the Sword, I think we're doing okay on our removal with this with these plots. So I think income all the way, The King's Road.
Yeah, slam dunk.
Okay, back to you for another Corset Sansa, Loot, another Pike, or Jory Cassell.
Since we just took the Septa, I'm kind of tempted to take the third Sansa, to be honest.
I'm tempted to also, but Jory might be. He spreads things out a little bit. He still is some potential card advantage. Part of me likes the consistency of a second Pike, though. Especially with two claim plots, like
we do have a quicker support and a building orders, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, that may be fair. Okay, probably getting the different spread with Jory then is what I would vote for over Sansa, having a different body that can be on the table at the same time.
Yep.
Okay, back to me then, I think, with Loot, Corset Arya, Vanguard of the North, and Street of Silk. I mean, this is our opportunity to grab a second Arya to boost the Septa, yep, and our odds of seeing her. All so day. I say, yep. All right, here we go. No pressure, Tommy. This is card 60. back to you with Put to the Torch, Pike, Little Bird, and Maester Windermere.
Kind of have the opportunity to get what you want with the other Pike, but I think Windermere is the right selection here.
Yeah, I think so. He's still some stealth for us.
Yep.
Cheap and spreads out the different possible characters that can be on the board some more.
Yeah.
Okay, then I guess back to me for, let's see, one, two,
final
three,
plot.
Four, five, six. Yep, final plot. Here we have Close Call, Power Behind the Throne, or wait for it, Tommy. Are you ready? I'm not sure you can really be prepared for this.
First, though.
The Winds of Winter.
Oh!
So, I mean, here's that terrifying thing, assuming in this format that if you can draft it, you can play it. Regardless of normal plot limitations, do we double up on both March to the Wall and Winds of Winter, despite what that does to our plot income? Or do we go with the safe bet for Close Call?
I'm thinking that the rules do not allow for that. I've not seen any documentation on how this draft format works, but it doesn't feel right to me that you would be able to do that, because you do have other options available. It's not like, well, those are the only plots I saw, or these are the only characters I saw.
Right.
I don't think that we could have had, it never felt to me like we could have had three Lordsport shipwrights, or, I'm sorry, in excess of three. Or in excess of three of the Priest of the Drowned Gods. I mean, that would have been awesome, but I still don't... I was never viewing the draft in that way.
Okay.
So I would say in the spirit of that, I think we go with the Close Call.
It's probably, honestly, the safer bet anyway for the income. Though part of me loves the idea of a plot deck with three two-claim plots and two March to the Walls.
Well, and we are running several... triplicates of characters here, so there could be a good situation for us to use this too.
Yep. All right, there we go then. That is the deck.
Definitely not the deck that I would have assumed we would have drafted with those two houses, but I honestly think that it actually probably in a draft situation could win some games.
I think so, too. I think it stands a very good chance.
With a plot lineup like that in a draft format and that many control attachments, I think you'd be doing some work. And it's not like you don't have closers, either.
Yeah, exactly. We did wind up getting some. Three of those Balans, even though we never saw like an Asha, which is a bummer.
Yeah, no Asha, they still do no some Theon. Work.
All right. There you have it, listeners. Experiment with it. I don't know, set up some Octagon leagues or something. I think it'll be a blast.
Fun of the draft.
Props and slops.
Props and slops.
Man, this one's kind of a tough one for me because the TV shows I've been working on this week or this season were delayed due to the vice presidential debate the other day. So no Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or new Scream Queens for me to talk about. Which is kind of a bummer.
How is that Scream Queens show?
I really get a kick out of it. I watched the first season and had a lot of fun. I think
is it bingeable at this point through any access?
Yeah, I think so. I believe all of season one's on Hulu now. If you have a Hulu subscription,
nice. Yeah, because I did like the looks of it. I just haven't gotten around to watching it.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty over the top, but I really got a kick out of it, and it does have a few legitimate, like, pretty decent scares, and a solid kind of whodunit mystery, like, oh, who is actually the killer? You know, buried underneath a lot of crude sex jokes and whatnot.
Gotta appreciate it for what it is, right?
Yeah. And who doesn't love Emma Roberts?
Right.
Playing the meanest of mean girls.
You are quite a fan of Arrow, right?
Yes, yeah. And while we were recording this, the season premiere went down, so I'll hopefully have caught up on that by the time we record next week. Did you watch it?
Well, so I've never been a comic book person. Anybody that listens to the cast knows that I'm the least knowledgeable when it comes to anything comic book. But as it turns out, it's really funny. I was at the gym today and I was running on the treadmill, and one of the several TVs that they had there was showing reruns of Arrow. I believe it was on TNT or something like that. In the middle of the afternoon, because I usually take my lunch during work and go to the gym instead of actually taking a lunch. But
oh, gotcha.
So I'm running along and I'm seeing this and it's on mute. I'm not listening to it or anything. But I'm like, man, this actually looks like really good quality TV in terms of, you know, just the way that it's shot and that kind of stuff. And it looked interesting. So I think I'm actually going to sit down and binge out on some Arrow the next chance I get.
Yeah, you should. You know, of course, there's some hit or miss episodes here and there. That tends to happen in 20 some odd episode, you know,
any show, seasons. Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it does a really decent job of being Batman the TV show, parentheses, only we're not really allowed to call it Batman because we weren't allowed to use the character since DC is using him in the films and they're silly about these things, close parentheses.
Well, and there's Gotham still flying around somewhere, right?
Right, but with no Batman.
Well, do you think they're going to stick with that forever?
We will see what happens. But yeah, check it out. I'll be curious to know what you think once you're, you know, maybe halfway through season one or something.
Yeah, I think the next time I have a long flight or something like that, I'll throw it on the tablet and watch it. So be looking forward to that. Yeah.
So aside from that stuff, I guess I really only have one prop this week. That's some international news. Or maybe some personal news that is connected to some international news. At the personal level, I finally have a reason to pick a Premier League team to follow. English Premier League football, that is.
Better answer out, wisely here.
Turns out I'm going to have to be following Swansea. Sorry.
All right. Justify.
Because Bob Bradley was just named as coach. First American to coach in the English Premier League.
Oh, well, that's pretty cool.
Sorry, manager. But as they everyone say. In the U.S. knows, you know, that job as coach. So I'm pumped about that. Obviously, there's a lot of back and forth with the pundits about how that's going to go, whether he deserved it or not. But honestly, I've always liked, you know, Bradley as a coach. So I, you know, want the best for him and then hope he does well over there. Though I admit some concerns less about his skill than about maybe his kind of more American mindset and style maybe not meshing with the Welsh team there. But we'll see.
Probably less of an issue there than it would be in continental Europe, but I think there definitely could still be some issues. My wife and I are Liverpool fans, so suck it, Swansea. Even though I'll still kind of have a little vested interest now that I know that about the new manager, because it would be good to see somebody from the States do well over there. I was always cheering for Tim Howard and all the players from the national team that actually made it.
Right. And it's hard not to root for Tim Howard. He's just a all-around badass and nice guy.
Well, and Clint Dempsey had a good career while he was over there as well. So,
agreed.
It's with those guys having just left, and I guess now the American void is being filled by managerial duties.
Yeah, no pressure.
But yeah, so there's my prop. I'll stay in the soccer vein, and I'll say props to Liverpool for kicking ass starting the season, because, man, we were due.
There we go. Well, any other props or slops on your side, Tommy?
No, I think we're good. I'll prop you. I mean, I think we got through this nicely with a two-man crew, eh?
Yeah. We tried pretty hard and didn't have that common misstep into the
turning of the page of the next chapter of the White Book.
Damn it, Tommy! Danger zone! Danger zone!
Eject!